Also today is Cody Tucker once again from 7220sports.com. Hey, Cody.
Duke, Dell, how are we doing today?
Doing great, Cody. Thank you so much for taking a little bit of time out of your schedule and meeting with us this morning. And I also want to point people out that you've got stuff coming out every day at 7220sports.com. So if that's not their, that's not on their daily bookmark, it should be. And you also have the free app for 7220. That's, so I encourage people to download that. And the thing you're in the middle of right now is Who Wore It Best. And you're talking about Wyoming basketball. This is one of those things. First off, I appreciate really reading it, and I think it's fun to read. And then, but you as the person who writes this, you always there's always somebody that's like, "Hey, now what about this guy?" I mean, you have to almost defend every one of these, and yet you seem to, I don't know, you handle it better than I would. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, you know, Dahl, I've done this for football. I did it when I covered Michigan State, and that's where I was really out of my element, was at Michigan State, because I was learning as I was going, obviously, not growing up in that area, and boy, I really got some people riled up over there. But football, yeah, it was the same way, and I tell you what, I'm just so thankful that I sat on this basketball one, because I was going to do it last summer, and I'm so thankful I sat on it now when basketball is really good and people are really excited about this team. It's really doing well, and people have a lot of fun with it, you know. And most of the people you'll find out, Dahl, most of the people that gripe about somebody, it's because it's their buddy or it's the guy who was the star when they were in school.
Yeah, I can see that.
So Cody, when it comes to these Who Wore It Best jersey numbers, is there one of them that stands out to you? It looks like you're up to number 13 right now, so you still have some to come. But of the ones you've done so far, is there a jersey number that you was the hardest to pick up to this point?
I tell you what, you know, as far as you guys know, I'm up to 13, but I actually just got done with like number 33 last night. So I'm trying to get way ahead on this thing. So it's honestly a huge blur to me, but there are some that are, you know, maybe some what ifs kind of thing. You know, obviously Kenny Sailors is one of the icons of Wyoming basketball at number 4, but the way that Ugo Adezawe, for instance, the way his career was projecting early in his career, where he's in Sports Illustrated as a freshman and he's this new hotshot in the league and scoring almost 20 points a game. You have to wonder what would have happened to him if, you know, he doesn't suffer that devastating knee injury. And then down the trough here a little bit, you know, you get to number 22. A lot of the new kids think about, you know, Larry Nance Jr., who of course is in the NBA right now, but then you got Josh Davis who just had an unbelievable career. And Harry Hall is a guy in the 60s that, you know, some of the old-timers probably remember, a guy who scored about 22 points a game. So there's some of that where it gets into it. But number 30, I will say, coming down the line here, especially for old-time Wyoming fans, you got a guy like Charles Bradley who wore number 30, and Flynn Robinson also wore number 30. Both are on Wyoming's all-century team. So that's the fun. Those are the fun ones where I just kind of put it out there that, hey, this is the guy, this is why I agree with it or don't.
You know, it's kind of fun. Ugo Adezawe, he was there when I was out in school, and I remember they were in the NIT, and we went to Oregon State, and he put on a big show. I had 20-10 in that game or somewhere close, and we were just so geeked for this guy. It's like, he's only a sophomore, and then, you know, I don't know the details. I don't know if it was, you know, just the technology is so much better now or the rehab or what, but yeah, he was just a shell of himself after that major knee injury, and it really is a sad thing, although he has gone on and done some cool things with basketball in Africa and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, he got his cousin to come here, which is Uche Nsanu-Amadi, who was the pick for number 5. So, you know, that was awfully nice of him to do that. You know, speaking of knee injuries and guys that, you know, that happened to, Marcus Bailey's another one. And just looking ahead a little bit, number 44, Bill Garnett wore number 44, too. So is it Bill Garnett? I haven't got there yet as far as breaking down the research.
Yeah, good luck with that one.
Yeah, a couple of really good ones on that. And there's another guy who's in the Hall of Fame who wore number 44. So, I mean, some of them are really tightly contested. And then, to be honest with you, some of them you get to and you Google every single name of every guy who wore it and nobody scored more than 3 points per game. And you're like, well, you know what? I'm just not going to pick one with this number.
That's Cody Tucker, 7220sports.com. You can find his full Who Wore It Best series at 7220sports.com. Cody, let's talk football a little. Dal and I brought this up last week after the Pac-12 made the announcement that they would be going away from the divisions. And shortly after that, the Mountain West did so also, saying they plan to eliminate football divisions in 2023. What's your takeaway from this? Do you like this move by the Mountain West?
Yeah, I think it's very, very logical. The only thing, of course, that the first thing that came to mind is are the rivalries going to be preserved? And you know, there's not a lot of reason to be super confident in the Mountain West, obviously, but even they can't screw this up, right? I mean, the Wyoming's got to play Colorado State every year. Wyoming, in my opinion, needs to play Air Force every year. I think the Utah State rivalry could be a sleeping giant right now, especially with the trading of the quarterbacks this offseason. You know, there's a little bit of bad blood happening there, and especially with Wyoming waxing them last year, even though they had such a great year over there in Logan. But that's the big one. And, you know, I asked UW for comment on that. They don't know, obviously, so they didn't comment. They have no idea how they're going to structure the schedule. But last Mountain West Media Days in Las Vegas, I spent about 20 minutes sitting down with the Air Force head coach, Troy Calhoun, and this had the wheels had already been in motion. And he said, as long as we can preserve Wyoming, Colorado State, and Nevada and UNLV, that's what really matters here. Other than that, it doesn't seem like anybody cares about divisions. Everybody gets it because you want to have your best shot at getting in the college football playoff or the biggest bowl game you can. So it makes perfect sense, in my opinion, fellas. It's just you got to keep those traditional rivals no matter what the scheduling model is.
Looking at the Cowboys specifically, you know, a couple of my buddies and I, we bring this up, and of course all my brothers are big Wyoming fans too. We just – last year, you go back to, I mean, Craig Bohl was mentioned in the article, the most stable coach. Remember this? And Cowboys had like the most returning players. And I mean, expectations were high. And then there were two or three games last year that just quite honestly were inexplicably bad. That were just like, what is going on here? This year, they're kind of on the opposite of that scale. They're replacing 85% of this, or they're replacing this. But I got to be honest, I'm actually quite excited. I'm excited to see what the running game is. I think there's a stable full of those guys. And I kind of want to start with that, Cody, and then you can kind of branch off from there. But Titus Swinn and Dwayne McNeely. And then I want to talk about these other two guys, kind of a thunder and lightning. You got a little scat back, and then you have a guy that Craig Bohl calls a thumper.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I'm with you 100%, Dahl. And that's not just from a reporter's point of view. Last year, Easton Gibbs, the only thing that was up for grabs basically was the outside linebacker spot. And that was Charles Hicks and Easton Gibbs. Easton won that. Charles, you know, transferred to Missouri. There was not a lot of suspense. So, you know, when you have a job lockdown, what does that give you? You know, a little bit of comfortability. They had a lot of comfortability in some games they shouldn't have, starting right out of the gate with a really good Montana State team that they had to, you know, come back from. And that 4-0 start last year did not feel like a 4-0 start. It felt 1-3 at best. I think, you know, they smashed Ball State. Other than that, it did not feel comfortable at all, in my opinion. And I'm really excited about this young group. And I've asked every one of them throughout the spring, what's the difference? You know, what is the big difference? Because last year you guys were talking about championships, outwardly talking about it, which is not a Craig Bohl staple, as you know. This year they're not talking about it, but they're talking about competition at every single position group. And that can only benefit people. And we're not going to know about the next stars until we get to see them and until they get to play on the field. Jordan Bertinolli is a perfect example, in my opinion. Coming from Casper, he first played against Nevada Reno during the opener during the COVID season, and I remember being in the press box at McKay Stadium and actually scrambling to say, who the hell is this guy? Never heard of him in my life. He's a freshman walk-on from Natrona County High School, and now he's a staple on that defensive front. Really excited about him, but hardly any of these positions are locked down. But one you mentioned that is locked down is Titus Swinn in the backfield for the Cowboys. He is just phenomenal, and he's a really good player, really good all-around guy. And he, make no mistake, if you're expecting to see Coach, you know, re-engineer this offense and throw it all over the place like he promised to do a couple of years ago, Titus Wynn will be the focal point of this offense. And DQ James is a lot of fun to watch him run. And I tell you what, Joey Brash was a lot of fun to watch, and Dwayne McNeely was a lot of fun to watch. during the Cowboys spring game. So the running game is going to be really good again. It's just a matter, in my opinion, can Andrew Peasley and this offense find a way to get something going through the air?
Cody Tucker, 7220sports.com. Cody, there was a lot of talk with the transfer portal and players that were leaving, and then you see an influx of players that come in due to the transfer portal. Who were the biggest gets, do you think, this year for Coach Bowl and this team through the transfer portal?
Weird how that saloon door swings both ways, isn't it, fellas? It sure didn't feel that way. Right after the bowl game, it felt like the sky was absolutely falling, but you have to start at the most important position, which is the quarterback. And Andrew Peasley, I really like Andrew Peasley. I like his makeup. Liked watching him play. Really scary with his feet. Really can be an efficient quarterback. So that's got to be the biggest one. But what's really telling, in my opinion, guys, is they get Cole DeMarzo from Michigan State, Ja'Cory Hawkins from Ole Miss, Darren Harrell from Wisconsin, Keelan Cox from Alabama, Chase Locke from USC. Some of the guys that go to the big boy schools, walk-ons or not, still want to go where they can play and be appreciated. And I think we're going to find that. I think we're going to find that guys from big schools still want to come play, and they're not worried. People bring up NIL and stuff all the time. I don't think these guys, from talking to them, are as worried about NIL as people might think they are. But as far as your question, I think, aside from Andrew Peasley, Ja'Cory Hawkins, the cornerback from Ole Miss, he could have had three picks in the spring game, and he's lightning fast. I believe he was clocked at 23.4 miles per hour game last year against Kentucky. Stupid fast, stupid athletic. He's a tall, lanky corner, and he looked like he fit right in. And if you think about it, that was his 15th practice in a Wyoming uniform in that spring game, and he made it look awfully easy.
There's one matchup. Obviously, I gotta bounce this off of you, and you know which one it is. The Cowboys obviously have a chance to have a good start. They go on the road to Illinois. They're 10-point dogs right now, but I actually think they have a chance to steal that. But they have a chance to win a couple of games at home, and then they go down to Provo, where they have not had a lot of success recently. And I think the last time they beat BYU, I was there. It was in 2003. In Laramie, I took a picture of the hole in the ground where they ripped the goalpost out of the ground, and I still have that picture somewhere. But that's a matchup that over here on the western side obviously has a lot of emotion to it. What's your gut reaction on this right now? I mean, I know we're weeks and weeks away, but hey, it's football season now.
Yeah, well, I don't know if emotion's the right word to mention when you talk about BYU on the eastern side of the state. Not very big fans, and not happy to see them on the roster or on the schedule, and not happy to have to go to Provo first. But that place has been an absolute house of horrors. I've been to probably 6 to 8 games there when I was just a fan, and my goodness, I thought I'd never be back. But you know, as always, BYU is going to be huge and old, and their offensive line is going to all have 3 children and balding, and you know, Wyoming's going to bring a bunch of pups. So you never know. BYU is really good. There's no doubt about it. They're huge on both lines, and that place is tough. When that place gets rolling, 65,000-70,000 people, it's not a fun place to play. So I know people are really torn on that game because, like you said, a lot of people on your side of the state, they want to see that game, and I think a lot of people over here are a little opposite. I think they are not happy that Tom Berman scheduled that game, and it's allegedly a home-and-home, but with BYU going to the Big 12, yeah, you have to wonder if they're going to throw a bunch of money at Wyoming and try and buy them out.
I, that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, and you wonder also if Berman says, you know what, no, you're not buying this out. There's not an amount of money, but I doubt it after COVID and everything. I think there is definitely a price tag, but I asked him about this when the schedule came out, or when we found out BYU was on the future schedule, and said, what are you doing? One of the hardest things for them is scheduling, and the Mountain West fills out half their schedule. Why are we helping them out? And he said exactly what you said. It means a lot to the people on the western side of the state, and I get that, but there's bad blood, and there always will be.